Well, good morning and welcome. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Chris. I'm lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and you have walked into a conversation called release. And for the past couple of weeks, we've been walking through and looking at this beautiful reality that we saw on Easter, this beautiful thing that Jesus Christ has done for us and all the implications of it. And we looked at how Jesus Christ, as he steps into our story, as he steps into our experience, he comes in and says, listen, I'm here to set you free. And then we've been looking at all the different ways that he's done that. But not only are we looking at how he set us free, but then we're also looking at how do we not just know this, how do we actually live in it? And for a lot of us, we've heard before what Jesus Christ has done for us, but unfortunately, our lives look exactly the same. Unfortunately, we continue to live in the same way, in the same places, on the same course that we did before. And so this time, as we've come to this, we're looking at it saying, okay, not only do we want to understand what Jesus Christ's death and resurrection has brought into our lives, but then how do we actually live in it? How do we practice it? How does it become our day-to-day reality? The passage that we've been focused on as we look at this process that God is inviting us into with him is found in Ephesians chapter 4, beginning in verse 22. It says, throw off your old sinful nature and your former way of life, which is corrupted by lust and deception. Instead, let the Spirit renew your thoughts and attitudes. Put on your new nature, created to be like God, truly righteous and holy. We've been walking through this and saying, okay, how can we take off what was before? How can we take off the path that we were on before, what we believed before, the everything about who we were before, and how do we begin to put on the reality of what Jesus Christ has done for us? And so for the past couple weeks, we've been looking at this from several different perspectives. We've been looking at how he came to free us from the past, and how do we actually live our lives every day to where we wake up every single morning believing without a shadow of a doubt that, no, I'm forgiven. And we've been walking through this process and looking at how we can begin to practice things that will help us take off these lies of guilt, these lies of shame, and begin to put on the truth of forgiveness. And we looked at how we can practice repentance. And we looked at how we can practice forgiveness with one another. And in the process, actually begin to awaken to our own forgiveness, to this beautiful truth, this reality that we've been set free from our past. We built on that last week as we continued working through this verse in 2 Corinthians 5:21, that God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, that we're forgiven, that in him we might become the righteousness of God. And this next reality that not only do we get to be free from our past, but we also get to be free from all of these identities that we're trying to live for, that we're seeking after, that we're trying to find value in, and how God comes in and says, no, I'm going to free you from all of the expectations of those. And I'm going to make it possible for you to have an unchanging identity of incredible value, because I'm going to adopt you as my son or my daughter. I'm going to make you holy and pure. I'm going to give you this uncorruptible identity because of Jesus Christ. I'm going to give you my righteousness. And we looked at how we practice that by changing the voice that we associate with. And if you haven't been with us for the past couple weeks, I encourage you, go back and listen to this. It's really amazing what God's doing for us and how God has opened the door to the cage. But as we've said throughout our time together, just because the door to the cage is open doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to walk out of it. So we're looking at how do we practice these things? How do we actually put off what was before and put on this unbelievable news of what Jesus Christ has made possible, this freedom that he's brought to you and to me. And I know as we come to today and as we come to another conversation in this series, for some of us, we're just thinking, like, what could possibly be next? Like, he's freed us from our past. He's freed us from our present and all these identities that we chase to find value. What could possibly be next? But here's the amazing thing about Jesus. Jesus didn't come to just set you partially free. He came to set you free in more ways than you can even begin to fathom. And as we look at our lives, I think that for all of us, we understand that we're enslaved or we're captives to our past. And we live our lives in so many ways enslaved to that. We understand this idea of identities, but I think there's another slavery, another captivity that we're aware of. We may not think of it this way, but I think most of us are aware of it. We live in the midst of it. Because you see, the reality is that we're not just captivated by or held captive by our past. We're not just held captive by these identities, but we're also, and I'd say it's true for every single one of us, we're also in so very many ways also held captive by our future. And for almost every single one of us, we live our lives constantly thinking about, constantly worried about the future. Where am I going to be? What am I going to do? What is this going to look like? And then every life insurance commercial we watch just scares us even worse. It just makes it worse. Are we going to have enough? Are we not going to have enough? Well, what's going to happen in my family? What's going to happen in this relationship? What's going to happen in my career? We live our lives every single day. I would say every single one of us, and some more than others, but I would say it's a part of all of our experiences where we live our lives held captive by the future. How in the world are we going to make this work? How am I going to make this marriage work? And we've been told that here's the thing, and we're told it in a really encouraging way. And so from a very young age, we've been told this truth that, listen, you create your future. And our teachers told this to us in a really encouraging, empowering way. They thought it was really encouraging. You get to create your own future. You can be whatever it is that you want to be. So here's the thing. You go into your future and you work hard at it. You give it everything that you've got and you can create your own future. They told it to us like, this is going to empower you. But you know what happens? You begin to look at it and you're like, wait a second. Wait. I have to create my own future. And then we begin to live our lives with this. We're like, well, then I have to make sure that I make the right decisions. And they say it like it's a really encouraging thing. But you know what I hear? Maybe you don't hear it this way. But you know what I hear? I hear, you create your own future, so don't screw it up. So make sure you don't screw it up. I know a lot of you hear that because almost every conversation that I have with college students as they're beginning their journey, they're thinking that, like, no, I'm responsible. I'm the one who creates my own future, and so I got to make sure that I make the right move, and I have to make sure that I pick the right major, and then you get out of college, and I have to make sure that I have the right job. And our church is full of young people who are just kind of stepping into the workplace or maybe the second job situation. They're having this conversation, man, I have to make the right decision. Why? Because I'm responsible. I create my own future. We're told it in a way that it seems really empowering. But as you get into it, it becomes, at least for me, overwhelming. How in the world how do I make the right decisions? I love the story. I love the story of the kindergarten teacher. She was having this conversation with her class, and she was so excited because she was going to empower her students and get them ready for the future. And so she came into class and she said to them, listen, I just want you kids to know that you can be whatever you want to be. You work hard at it. You can be whatever you want to be. You can create your own future. Nothing can hold you back, right? Impossible is nothing. You just go at it. You give it all that you have, and you can become whatever you want to be. And this one little girl started to get really excited. She got really excited. She's like, seriously? She's like, yeah, absolutely. She said, anything I want to be. She said, yeah, you can become anything that you want to be. And the girl's almost giddy with the excitement. She's like, man, I didn't think I didn't think that'd ever be possible. And they started to go around the class. She said, what is it that you want to be, that you're gonna work hard at, that you can become whatever you want to be? And it finally got to this little girl, and she was so excited. She said, I'm going to become a unicorn. And the teacher paused for a moment. And realize that maybe this is something we say a lot. Maybe this is something we say to one another frequently. But it may not actually be true. From the time that we were this old, we were confronted with our future and we were told, listen, you can become whatever you want to be. That's not actually true. Not only is this message unbelievably overwhelming that you're responsible to create your own future, but the idea that you can, if you just work hard at it, you can be whatever you want to be. It's not true. It's not true. Because here's the thing. And many of you have learned this. Some of you are still young enough where you still believe the lie, but many of you have learned this. You're not in control. You're limited. We're limited. And no matter how hard you work, there are certain things that are going to happen in your life that you just simply can't control. And they will forever change your future. No matter how hard I work, no matter what I did, it would not have changed the fact that my second son was born with Down syndrome. And my future changed. And there's nothing I could have done to change that. Not only is it overwhelming, this idea that you create your own future, but then there's this lie sewn into it. And if you haven't experienced it already, there will come a day when you will. And you'll get the call. It can come from a lot of different places. But you get the call. And the doctor says, we found a lump. And all of a sudden, the future changes. I'll never forget the day that we got the call that my uncle, who's like a second father to me, spent every summer with him at the age of 33, was gone. And my future changed. We live in this world where we've been told since we're this big, listen, you're the one who's responsible for your future. And ultimately, the truth is that you are. But as we're on this journey, it's unbelievably overwhelming, because how do you know? How do you know what the right decision is? How do you know what the right major is? And then even when you seem like you're making all the right decisions, even when it seems like you're headed in the right direction and you did everything right in order to be able to create that future, the phone call comes and everything changes. We live our lives in this weird reality when it comes to our future. And it enslaves us with all sorts of pressures It influences every decision that we make. It consumes our thoughts. It drives us to live lives in which we can't enjoy the present because we're constantly worried about whether or not we're actually doing what we need to do in order to create the future. A future that we can't control. A future that we can't see. And into this Jesus steps and says, listen. I didn't just come to save you from the past. I didn't just come to save you and to free you from the identities that you're pursuing right now. He says, I also came to free you from the pressure and the weight of the future. I came to change everything in the way that you relate to the future. As Jesus is talking to his disciples in John 10, he's talking to them about this and the future that he has for them. Listen to these words. These should be unbelievably encouraging words to us. It says, the thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. He says, my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Other translations translate this, to give them an abundant life. He says, guys, pay attention to this. He says, I didn't just come to take care of your past. I didn't just come to take care of your identity. He says, no, I came. I'm here to change your future. I'm concerned with your future as well. Not only am I going to deal with what's behind, but I'm going to change what's ahead. I have this amazing future in store for you. And as he continues this conversation with them just a couple chapters later, in John chapter 14, he talks to them about two different aspects of this and how he's preparing this future for them. And he's talking to them about the end and how he eventually is going to be leaving them. And as he's talking to them about him leaving, he's talking to them about the future and how he's going to interact with them as it pertains to the future. Listen to the first aspect of it. And this is something that we cannot downplay. It's so very, very, very important. He says, John 14, verse 1, it says, don't let your hearts be troubled. And they're getting upset because he's talking about leaving. He says, trust in God and trust also in me. There is more than enough room in my Father's home. If this were not so, would I have told you that I'm going to prepare a place for you? When everything is ready, I will come and get you so that you will be with me where I am. I love this little passage right here because it tells us the heart of Christ. Some of you think that the heart of Christ is for you to change. The heart of Christ is for you to be with him. And he says, here's what I want. Here's what I'm doing, guys. I'm going to prepare a place so that one day you're going to be able to be with me. He says, and you know the way to where I'm going. He says, you, and I've taught you how to be able to follow me. You know how to get there because I'm going to give my life for you. And he talks to them about their eternal future. We don't celebrate this enough. This is phenomenal. This is amazing. The truth of this should overwhelm us, guys, that when you step into a relationship with Christ, when you stop trying to prove yourself to him, when you stop trying to earn your way back to him, and you just accept, Jesus did it all for me. He took care of all of it for me. Jesus says, your eternal future, it's secure forever. You don't have to spend another moment of your life, not one minute of your days, ever worrying about your eternal future, because here's the thing. I'm preparing a place for you, and you're going to be with me, and it's going to be incredible. He says, so let's just take that off the table. Let's just make sure you understand. You never have to worry about that again. Your eternal future is secure. But then as he continues talking to them, he says, but it's not just about your eternal future, because again, go back to John 10:10. What does he say? He says, I'm talking about this life right now, that they can have an abundant life in the future life ahead of them. And so as he's continuing this conversation with them in John chapter 14, he says, I've secured your eternal future. He says, but also, you need to understand something, I'm going away. At one point he says to his disciples, he said, it's actually better that I'm going away, which is weird because you think, why would it be better that Jesus Christ leaves? But Jesus says, it's better that I leave because because the Father's going to do something when I leave that has to do with your future. Listen what he says. John chapter 14, just a couple verses later in verse 26. He says, but when the Father sends the Advocate as my representative, that is the Holy Spirit, he will teach you everything and will remind you of everything I have told you. He says, listen, not only have I secured your eternal future, but here's what I'm going to do. Because you can't see the future, you can't control the future, but I can. And so I'm going to send someone. When I go away, the Father's going to send the Holy Spirit, and the Spirit is going to live within you. And he's going to live this journey with you. And here's what he's here for. He is going to lead you and guide you and direct you into the future that I have planned for you. And that future is the best future possible for you. He says, I know you guys are upset that I'm going away, but here's the thing. When I go away, there's going to be another who's going to come. The Spirit is going to come. And as the Spirit comes, he is going to lead you into your future. I know that you're limited, but he's not. And he's going to be the one who leads you into the future that I have prepared for you. So sometimes we talk about the Bible this way, that the Bible is what leads us into the future. The Bible actually says something different about itself. Listen to what it says. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 17, it says, put on salvation as your helmet and take, this is really, really important, guys. This is important for you to understand. It says, take the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. The Bible doesn't teach us that the Bible leads us into the future. The Bible actually teaches us that the Spirit of God uses this tool, this letter that God has given to us in order to be able to direct us and lead us into the future. And Jesus says, I'm going to send someone, and he's going to use this tool that you have, and he's going to work and move in your life so that you don't have to figure it out anymore. You just follow him. You just follow him, which is why, I don't know if you know this or not, but which is why the early followers of Christ, they weren't actually called Christians. The term Christian wasn't used until later on in the movement. At the beginning, there were two words that they used primarily to identify themselves. They didn't call themselves Christians. Christians was a derogatory term that outsiders used to describe these people who were following Jesus. There's a passage that talks about in Acts chapter 11, verse 26. It says, and when he found him, and there's a story here, but we won't go into it. He says, he brought him to Antioch. So for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people. Listen to what it says here. It says, the disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. You see, at the beginning, these followers of Jesus Christ, they didn't call themselves Christians. It was actually something that the city of Antioch, they're trying to figure these people out, and they keep talking about this guy, Christ, and they actually think that it's Jesus' last name, Christ, and so they associate that with it, and they're trying to figure out a word to describe these people, so they call them Christians. The early believers didn't call themselves that. They called themselves disciples. Another thing that they called, actually one of the main ways that they were identified early on, is that they were called, listen to what it says in Acts chapter 9, verse 2. It says, he requested letters addressed to the synagogues in Damascus, asking for their cooperation in the arrest of, and this is what they're originally called. Listen to what it says, in the arrest of any followers of the way. Here's how they identified themselves. This church kicks off. What are we going to call ourselves? What do we do? Well, we just listen to the Spirit and we do what he says. So I guess you could just call us followers. Or another word that's exactly the same is this word disciple. What is a disciple? It's someone who follows someone else. He says, this is what we do. We just follow. So we're followers of the way. We're followers of Jesus. We're just disciples of Jesus. That's who we are. They didn't call themselves Christians. They called themselves followers. Why? Because I know sometimes in the church today, we're like, okay, we're doing this big movement. We're doing this big thing. The early disciples, they weren't worried about doing a big thing. As a matter of fact, they didn't look at it and say, listen, we're going to change the world. They didn't even know what was going to happen. They just said, okay, God, whatever you tell us to do, we're going to do. And so the Spirit says to Peter, I want you to go out and I want you to speak on this day. And all of a sudden, like 3,000 people come to know Christ. Peter didn't go out that day saying, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to create this whole movement. He just said, okay, what do you want me to do? And I'll do it. Guys, what are we? We're just followers. We're just followers. I can't even imagine what Peter would have said to you if you would have asked him at any point during the book of Acts, like, what's next? So what's next, Peter? What's your plan? Peter never had a plan. Peter never had a plan his whole life, first of all. But then also, above that, when it came to the launch of the church, he never had a plan. He didn't have a plan. He didn't have a clue what was happening. His only plan was this. I gotta listen, because I just wanna make sure that when he says to do something, that I do it. Peter didn't spend his time worrying about the future. He's like, no, I've been freed from that. I've been freed from that. I don't have to worry about the future. I just do what he tells me to do. Jesus had actually demonstrated this for his disciples, because I don't know if you realize this either, but Jesus did the same thing himself. Listen to what he says in John chapter 5, verse 19. It says, so Jesus explained, I tell you the truth, the Son, he's talking about himself, can do nothing by himself. He only does what he sees the Father doing. Whatever the Father does, the Son does also. Another point, he says, I just say what he tells me to say. I just do what he tells me to do. Jesus says, not only am I calling you to follow me, but you need to understand something. I follow him. And whatever he tells me to do, that's what I do. Whatever he tells me to say, that's what I say. I'm just a follower. And the early church launches, what does it mean to be like Jesus? We just follow. Whatever he tells me to do, I'm going to do. Wherever he leads, that's where I'm going to go. And that whole idea of, well, you have to create your future, and you have, they lived with none of that. Completely free of it. They didn't figure it out. Whatever he tells me to do, that's what I'm going to do. Paul talks about it using another word. Listen what he says in Romans chapter 12. In Romans chapter 12, verse 1, it says this, and so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies, and throughout the beginning of Romans, the first 11 chapters, he's been talking about what we've been talking about for the past couple weeks. He's been talking about how God has freed us from our past. He's been talking about how God has made us into the righteousness of Christ, and this amazing thing that he's done for our identity. He's been working through grace through the first 11 chapters of this book, and then he gets to chapter 12, and as he gets to chapter 12, he says, okay, so now in light of everything that we've just talked about, in light of all the beautiful things that Jesus has done for you, here's what I want for you to do. He says, and so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. He said, I want you to just follow. I want you to give your life to him, and then he uses this word. He says, let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. He says, this is truly the way to worship him. He uses a different word. He says, it's worship, this idea of following. Do you know what it means to worship someone? Have you ever been so enamored by someone that you just wanted to be like them? Like you were so enamored by them, so amazed by them that you wanted to dress like them. So you bought the clothes that they wear and you learned how to walk. Like you even paid attention to the way that they walked. And so you're trying to learn how to walk like they walk and you're trying to talk like they talk and you're listening to everything that they have to say. You're just soaking it all up because you're so enamored by them. It's so amazing to you that you just want, you'll do anything that you can to be like them. I know what it's like. I grew up in the 80s, and I love basketball. So for me, I did everything I could to be like Mike, which is Michael Jordan, right? So some of you have seen the commercial, Be Like Mike. That was my theme song for my life. I spent hours and hours trying to be like Mike. To this day, I still own a pair of Jordans. And I tried to, I watched how he played basketball, and it was just so amazing and graceful, and what he could do was, I was enamored by him. I was awestruck. I was just constantly lived in awe of what he could do, and it just seemed he was able to do it over and over and over again. And so I did everything that I could to be as much like him as possible, which is hard for a white kid who's really short. It's interesting, we talk about this idea of worship in church, and people are like, I don't know what that means, but we know exactly what that means. And some of you are looking like, oh, I can't believe you did that. You do it too. You do it all the time. Some of you, the reason you have on what you have on right now is because you saw someone wearing it, and you're like, I just wear what she wears, because and she's just so beautiful, and so I just want to be like her. We do it all the time. And sometimes it goes to crazy lengths. Have you guys seen what's happening with this? Is it Kylie? Is it Kylie Jenner? Kylie Jenner? I'm glad I don't know. Have you guys seen what these girls are doing with the shot glasses to make their lips look like hers? They're sucking on these shot glasses to make their lips swell up so that their lips can be big like hers. That's a terrible idea. You can go online. There's some, disgusting pictures because it like bursts all their blood vessels around their lips. It's awful. But we know what this means. We live in a world that is constantly doing this, where we become so enamored with someone. We become so enamored with someone that our whole lives, I just want to be like them in any way that I can. I just want to be like them. I just want to follow them. If I could just walk in their footsteps, just place my feet where their feet have been, if I could become like them. We were talking about on speaking team the ridiculous lengths people go to this. And they told me about a guy who has paid over $150,000 to make himself look like Justin Bieber. Have you guys heard this story? He's a 32-year-old man. No lie. And the crazy thing is Justin Bieber's still growing up. He's not going to look the same in a little while. We know what this is like. And Paul says, you know the idea of worship when you become so enamored by someone that you have to be like them. You just want to be like them. You'll follow them wherever they go. You'll wear whatever they wear. You'll talk however they talk. He says, that's what I want for you to be with Christ. He says, that's what I am with Christ. He says, I just want to live my life just putting my feet right behind his. Like a little boy walking through the snow behind his dad, right? Like you just putting your feet in those footsteps. I just want to follow. He talks to the church about this in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 1. He says, imitate God, therefore, in everything that you do. So this is what it looks like. You just imitate. You just follow. Whatever he said to do, that's what you do. I think Paul is one of the greatest examples that we have of someone who lived free when it came to their future. He lived free. He doesn't worry about his future. He didn't look at it and say, man, I got to figure this whole thing out. He's just like, no. Okay, God, what do you want me to do now? Where do you want me to go now? I'm just going to follow, and here's what I believe about you. I believe not only have you secured my eternal future, I believe you've secured my future here and now. And I'm not going to live with all that pressure and weight that I used to live with before, because you've set me free. We live our lives enslaved to our future. And Jesus comes in and says, no. Not only have I set you free from your past, not only have I set you free from this whole identity thing, but I've set you free when it comes to your future. So how do we do that? Throughout the series, we've been saying, not only how do we know, but then how do we do that? How do we put off all those things, all those pressures that we've been living with about the future, all that worry? How do we begin to put that off and put on the freedom that he's come to give us as it pertains to our future? How do we work through this process as it pertains to our future? Come next week. And we'll begin to work through the practical steps, because this is a beautiful thing, guys. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. This is the beautiful thing about our dad. Our dad never tells us to do something. He never instructs us to walk down a path without taking our hand and walking down it with us. And when it comes to this, he does the very same thing. So next week, we're going to start walking through, okay, how does he instruct us to practice taking off all those pressures of the future and putting on the freedom of following him into the future that he has planned for you and for me. Will you pray with me? Father, it really is amazing. It's just amazing that the more we come to understand you, the more that we come to know you, the more we see of you, the better it gets. It's amazing all of the different ways that you've come to bring us freedom. And Father, my prayer for those who are here today, Father, I pray that as we walk through this series, as we walk through this conversation, that they would not only become aware of the cage in which we've lived for so long, but that they would not only become aware of the fact that the cage, the door has been opened, but Father, my prayer for them is that they would live in the freedom that your son died to give them. Father, I believe that you're most glorified when we live in the fullness of what you died to bring us. I believe you've taught us that. But yet for so many of us, we continue to live in the cage. I pray for those who are here that this would be the beginning of a whole new journey, that they would step out of the cage and truly live in your freedom. In Jesus' name, amen.